podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Today's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast comes in association with Nutmeg, the Scottish football periodical. The subscription-only quarterly publication is filled with top-quality writers, great articles and fascinating stories about the beautiful game in Scotland. Get your subscription at www.nutmegmagazine.co.uk.
Podcast that thinks many more people than Johnny Harvey need to take their face for a shite. My name is Craig Cairns, and I am joined by two beautiful human beings today. The first is a man whose voice you may have heard on A View from the Terrace on Friday, and I think that pink blob with stubble was a decent resemblance, Andy Harrow.
Thanks, I haven't seen it yet. Because I was away on a stag do all weekend, I haven't seen it, so I'm going to catch up with it probably after we do this. So I'll take your word for it that it is a pink blob, because I have literally no idea.
With stubble. And a man who still hasn't updated us on the best World Cup wall chart he's ever seen. It's Tom Watt.
Yeah, hello.
I was deep in your Twitter today.
That was. Oh my God, that's awful. Yeah, the best World Cup world chart ever. I mean, may never see the light of day on Twitter, but I'll let you know about
An
that.
Update would be welcome. Thank you. So we are going to talk about the five matches that have already taken place this weekend in the Premiership. We are recording during what looks like a very wet and frantic match between St Mirren and Kilmarnock, but unfortunately we're not going to be able to cover that one. We'll start with the live match from Friday, and that was Hibs 1, Rangers 1. And this game, I don't know, it was very much your proverbial game of two halves, where Rangers absolutely battered Hibs in the first 45 minutes, but failed to put them away.
Yeah, I mean, very much kind of both teams in a nutshell, I felt a little bit. You know, Rangers for 70 minutes, I'd go as far as to say, well into the second half, were well on top, had plenty of chances, had all of the ball, looked dangerous every time they went forward. And Hibs were incredibly open and didn't seem to know how to stem the tide at any point. Heckenbottom, obviously very early days, but was started this very open 4-4-2 again. And for the first half, it was just wave after wave of Rangers attack. Then, against the run of play, Hibs get a goal, and it looks like there's only going to be one winner in a completely different way. And then it was all Hibs until the very last minute.
And even Rangers' goal came from slightly strange circumstances, because Hibs were a blunt instrument in that first half, and the closest they got to the goal was when Canberry failed to control the ball after a decoy offside flag went up. And from there, that's when Rangers counter-attacked and eventually got a pretty decent goal through Candias.
Yeah, it was a good finish. And it was, you didn't really see any way back for Hibs for quite a long period of the game. But Rangers have had a bit of a problem that they haven't been ruthless enough at times this season. And that's partly what sets Celtic apart from all the chasers, that they can put teams away generally from 1-0 up. Rangers missed a bunch of chances. Morelos missed a couple of decent chances. And it just, the longer it's 1-0, they're going to be able to, you know, Hibs are going to probably have a chance given they've got Canberra and McNulty on the pitch. And they, you know, it was ultimately a really good cross and good work from McNulty, a decent finish from Canberra that got them back into it. But yeah, if I was a Hibs fan, I'd probably be quite happy to get a point out of that given the kind of overall performance. And definitely, for Rangers, given the other results over the weekend, not a total disaster, but just frustrating from the point of view that, again, they have looked dangerous for large periods and not being able to finish somebody off.
Yeah, I mean, Steven Gerrard still hasn't beaten Hibs in three shots. Great goal from Candelas, and I'm a big fan of his incredibly angry celebration.
What was that about? I don't know. Who was he angry with?
I mean, Kamara comes and, like,
he's like, no.
And just, like, shrugs him off. you know, and it's absolutely furious. I will not, you know, we've been trying in every which way to score and people have missed much easier opportunities than this. I've now put us ahead, but no, I will take none of your love. Again, Rangers, I think I'm right in saying Rangers have had more shots this season than any other team in the league. And just the failure to put away some of these simpler chances means that as their defence is slightly prone to the odd error, they let other teams in. I mean, McNulty, to his credit, I think he's been an exceptional signing, probably the exceptional bit of...
One of the best in January.
A goal or an assist in the league every 56 minutes at the moment, which is wild for, I think, you know, it's only 6 or 7 games, but still crazy. And he seems to have been around for a very, very long time and had a 10-year-long career and he's only 26. But I think I'm right in saying he's a Hibs supporter. He looks at home. He's had a nomadic career down south in League One and the Championship. But he looks like he really cares and he's making an awful lot of things happen for them at the moment.
So talk about how Heckenbottom kind of set up, because I thought that given that against Celtic, they played that kind of 4-4-2, that flat four across the middle, and they just got overrun in the centre midfield. Brown had a field day. And then for this game, even though they might not be quite as strong in the centre of the park, one of Rangers' strengths, especially since they've added Kamara in January, has been the centre midfield. And again, there was a mismatch in there, just in terms of numbers. I just thought it was a curious way to set up again. And it took until... I mean, he changed it during the first half. He put Camberi wide left, which, I mean, that's a new one on us. I don't think he's played out there since he's come to Scotland. And even then, it didn't really work. He said that he had to wait until he got in at half-time to give them some more instructions. And then, obviously, that worked and they came out and they got the reward in the second half. But, yeah, I thought it was a curious way to set up from the off.
Yeah, it meant Milligan had to do a lot of heavy lifting. When you've got that midfield around them, you've got two up front already, and then you've got Horgan, Malin and Omeyonga sort of in front of them. That's a lot that you need to do to protect your defence, and it obviously didn't work. That's been kind of one of Hibs' weakish areas all season, is that midfield, because they just haven't got that shape. Lennon never quite figured out how to accommodate all those
never
players.
Never got a settled one.
And it doesn't look like Heckenbottom's quite got it yet either. At least, again, I guess he was able to rectify it to some degree. They did look a bit more secure the second half, but it was a bit strange. I mean, I guess at this point he's still trying things out, I suppose, and he wants to see different things from different formations and see what works and what doesn't work. And in that sense, that's okay. Like, it's not going to make too much of a difference this season, and it might help him next season going forward, but... Yeah, it didn't necessarily work. I mean, I would say Hibs were pretty lucky to get out of this game with... they didn't. They still had 10 men at the end of the game, but they were lucky that it didn't happen a fair bit sooner. Gray should almost certainly have been sent off.
Yeah, and there was a McGregor one as well, which I thought was kind of borderline, you know what I mean? I don't think he could have complained if he had got sent off, but I don't think it was a stick-on red. But it was coming when they... Although the one that McGregor did get sent off for in the end, he was recovering for someone's mistake.
Somebody
had given the ball away or something like that. But anyway, speaking of mistakes, the Rangers goal, now, it was a foul at the other end of the pitch. Tavernier's definitely fouled by Omeyonga. But I think Rangers can definitely defend that a lot better. First of all, they've got about 90 yards of the pitch to defend. Mm-hmm. And initially I said on Twitter, I picked out a few players, and watching it back, one of the players I didn't pick out was Kamara, and I think Kamara's maybe more at fault than Candeias, because he's closer to Camberi because there's like a second phase of play. I think Hibs kind of repel it slightly and there's a second phase of play, and Kamara just kind of drifts back into his natural position rather than and leaves Camberi over his shoulder. And at the same time, Candeias should probably still be aware that Tavernier is the guy that's been felled at the other end of the pitch, and as a right winger in front of that right back, he should probably be the guy covering. But you could pick 3 or 4 players at least, I think, that could have done better for that Hibs goal.
Yeah, and I think that it's not necessarily been... I mean, Rangers' problems throughout the season have not been going forward. They're a team that are set up to attack so much. But if that is the philosophy, then there needs to be concentration has been the problem at the back right throughout. It's not been a lack of bodies. It's not been the capabilities of the defensive players. It's been a lack of concentration, and I think that was kind of on show again. Whether it's this team, you know, Hibs just didn't look threatening at any point, and it becomes easier to switch off. Going back to the point about the tactics, it's difficult to tell whether Hibs look like a team that are kind of caught between two mentalities, like Lennon's press and Heckenbottom's much more kind of about the space and about playing a position. So it means that teams can run through them as Celtic did if they're not, you know, if they're not dropping deep and going man for man as they did a little bit more in the second half. So I think it must be easier for you to switch off in games like that when you're not relentlessly faced with, you know, tracking your man, or, you know, your fullbacks can get forward for 75 minutes without there being any kind of attack of real note.
But that's what defines a really good defender from a kind of semi-average one. That happens with goalkeepers. The ones that happen to be really good at the top level, the ones that have nothing to do for 89 minutes, yep, and are able to pull off a like brilliant save. Yeah. Or, you know, McGregor, from a Scottish perspective, would probably be in that bracket, but the defenders are not in that level, and that's where they fall down sometimes.
But I think the bigger difficulty, and I think actually the problem Rangers have had, and the reason that they won't win the league this season, isn't necessarily that they concede these sloppy goals. It's that they dominated that game for 75 minutes. A moment of carelessness,
and they let someone else.
But then they completely retreated into their shell. Then they were completely shell-shocked. And whereas a team that will go on to win the league would not think, well, we're under pressure now, we're going to retreat, and Hibs were allowed to run over the top of them for 15 minutes, they would go, look, we've not killed this off, someone has to take responsibility and step up.
But again, that also comes down to the fact that they are so reliant on Morelos. And if Morelos didn't have his best game, I mean, he obviously looked dangerous, but
He was desperate to score. Yeah, he was too desperate to score, I think.
But they still have that problem where, and they're going to have it till the end of the season, where if Morelos isn't scoring a goal, there isn't really anyone else who's going to do it. And I think maybe you get to the point where 70 minutes in, you're like, it's probably not going to happen for him. So try and hold out. They've kind of got problems defensively and up front. None of them massive, massive problems, especially next season if Morelos stays. They're not huge, huge problems. They're fixable, but they're enough to kind of do them in for this season.
Very fine margins, not there yet.
Well, a game that wasn't anything but fine margins, that was a decent link, but was the Don't Tell Graham It's a Lanarkshire Derby. A game which saw, first of all, Motherwell win 3-0, but also saw Ziggy Gordon and Leonard Soar retire.
Yeah, they got an absolute doing, didn't they? Yeah, it was horrible. And it was the fact that Motherwell were so convincing so early on with it and just ran over the... I mean, you'd have forgiven Hamilton maybe a wee bit if they were tiring towards the end of a game they'd been chasing, but there was just no organisation down that would have been their right-hand side whatsoever. They got pulled all over the place. It was... For Motherwell, it was obviously pretty impressive, but Hamilton... I can't quite put my finger on this version of Hamilton now. They're weird. They might be even weirder than Martin Cannon's version of
them. They're like a gung-ho poker player. Yeah. You get huge swings either way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's
what
it feels like.
You go up to Pittodrie,
yeah,
and you win 2-0 against the odds, and then you get absolutely pumped off Motherwell, yeah, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, a very, very strange team just now. And the goals were all so terrible to lose. I mean, every single one of them.
A couple of tap-ins, pretty much.
Yeah, they're just really, really poor.
But Boli Aribi, he looked absolutely fantastic in this game. Didn't get on the score sheet, but looked like he was a standout performer.
He looked like he really enjoyed it as well. I mean, he was given so much space down Hamilton's right-hand side, but looked like he really enjoyed it. And I just think the way that they started, and Motherwell done this a couple of times this season, when they start like that and they just blitz teams, they've got so many runners. It's almost, this is a really simplistic way of putting it, but at the start of the season, they lacked pace in wide areas. And all it seems like they've done is bring in pace in wide areas, which is a far more complicated thing to do than it sounds. But they've managed to remedy that, and they've now got players that can stretch the opposition right across the front line and from fullback positions.
They've gone from having pretty much almost zero flair in their team, or ones yeah. that were afraid to pick or couldn't get into their team or whatever, to having like so many options, to the point where if you double up on Hasty, then you've got Turnbull and Aribi break in, and you've got even Campbell. I mean, Campbell's not going to score you a lot of goals, but Campbell is a kind of all-action player that will get box to box and that kind of thing. And yeah, it's just they've just gone from being this kind of team of giant centre backs and five across the midfield that lump the ball forward every opportunity to being like one of the flair teams in the division. the transformation has been incredible.
Yeah, I guess it speaks a lot for Robinson, the fact that not only has he brought some of these guys in, whether they've gone through the youth team or he's brought them out on loan, the fact he's then willing to play them and has changed the approach to suit those guys because they're the best people to play at the time. And I guess, it's positive. I know they're probably going to lose Hasty, and Aribi probably won't be there next season either, but it gives them another template going forward. I keep talking about next season, actually. I know we've got like another 8 or 9 weeks of this season to go with it. But in a sense, you know, Motherwell's, I guess, are pushing for six, aren't they? But Robinson can kind of look towards next season in terms of he's got another way of playing. But it's a nice feeling when you're 2-0 up in the Lanarkshire derby after 11 minutes.
I think it was also quite telling of Robinson, who kind of slated them full time for not putting their feet on Hamilton's neck and going for more.
He did caveat it, that's a lesson for them, I think.
But like, yeah, they're a young team, they need to learn.
Difficult to please and things like that.
You're like, yeah, you're 3-0 up after 40 minutes and you know, you'd absolutely killed them.
Whereas Brian Rice was absolutely raging. Quote.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know, it's difficult to tell whether he had justification, because, I mean, they were terrible, but they were... They looked like they were terrible in the way they were set up, rather than...
I'm not sure Gogic is a central midfielder.
No. Well, they also seem to be playing right back for the goals. They seem to be, because they were obviously struggling on the right hand side. Yeah, yeah. He was doubling up, and it didn't actually help. Yeah.
And then for the penalty, I thought Aribi was very clever there, because he deliberately kind of moved his run back across Gogic so that Gogic either had to let him go or clumsily foul him, and that's what he did, and he won the penalty.
Yeah, I think it was kind of symptomatic of the way that Motherwell were playing. They got so many men in the box, and Hamilton have, like, I mean, a bit like you were saying before, they've almost evolved like Pokemon style. They've gone even more Hamilton and been even more inconsistent. Yeah. And they've turned they've brought a couple of players in January who you were like, you know, George Oakley, who was never a Premier League player and was never going to keep them up, is a Premier League player and might keep them up. whereas they've kind of shifted things around, and they're a lot more open, and they're a lot more... They play a little bit like either they're 1-0 down or 3-0 up at all times. But the downside of that is that they are incredibly open, and you can get at them with runners, and Aribi absolutely tormented them, and Gogic had a bit of a mare and didn't really know where he was, I don't think. I think Aribi was far more aware of where Gogic was than where Gogic was of Aribi.
I was hoping you were going to pick a particular Pokemon that they'd gone from to. I mean, I don't really know any of the Pokemon.
I wouldn't get a reference anyway. You want to give it a bash? No.
Put me on the spot. No,
you can come back to us if you get one. Not that it would mean anything. You could just made up a name.
Nor me. Yep.
Scraggle Par or something. You could have just said that, and I would have. There we are. We got one.
The only one I really know was Pikachu. Did he actually have one? Did he have like a
another? He did evolve.
Did he?
I can't remember what it was, but yeah, he did.
Was it like Gremlins, where he became like a baddie and stuff?
He got like darker coloured. He went sort of brown coloured. I can't remember.
Sorry, I've really put you in the spot about Pokemon.
My knowledge of Pokemon is very limited, as you can tell.
Let's move on, Craig.
I feel like some sort of Pokemon expert in Count Company.
No idea how I'm supposed
I'll
to
just,
link.
Just tell. I'll just make up a name and believe it.
Yeah. True.
St. Johnstone.
Yeah.
Lost 3-1 at Livingston. That's no one's in ninth, including 8 losses. They've only scored 3 goals in those 9 matches. They've picked up fewer points than anyone else since the winter break. Are we underestimating St. Johnstone?
Underestimating them? Oh, sorry.
That's a joke, sorry. Yeah, there's quite a lot of times we put out our predictions and when we don't back a St. Johnstone win, some of their fans jump on our backs and say we're underestimating them.
I think for the first time ever, we are estimating them. Exactly. Yeah, spot right, on. Yeah. They've really suffered with the injuries. Their two best players for most of the season, Xander Clark and Dre Wright, are out. It shouldn't have such a dramatic effect, but I think you can see that it has. It's question marks over whether Joe Shaughnessy will be there next season.
And he's not getting a lot of love from the fans as well. And he had a pretty poor performance in this game. I know he scored, but he was at fault for the... Oh God, I'm getting the goals mixed up now. Halkett for the first goal?
Halkett was the first one.
Yeah. I think he was marking him. But anyway, he didn't have a great game overall.
No, and it's a shame because it's kind of been the end of Sexy St. Johnstone, which was such a nice story for the season.
So Kennedy, I mean, you say Dre Wright and Clark, possibly the two best players, I wouldn't disagree, but Kennedy was also very good at the start of the season. Yeah. He's gone off the boil. But January just seems to have ruined them. Now, I know it's difficult to play... We've seen it happen to Motherwell and to Dundee United in recent seasons where you play a trilogy against Celtic and it effectively ends any kind of form momentum that you had. And there's similar things can happen with them here, but I mean, they look like they're recruited quite well in January. Sean Goss is quite a decent player, but I mean, I don't think they've won a game with him in the starting lineup. They signed Swanson and O'Halloran, who've both done very well in the past for St. Johnstone. And that was adding to the sexiness that was already apparent, if you can call Danny Swanson sexy. And these signings haven't worked out. It's just...
The Goss one, I don't think it's working because they're too static in that midfield now. Him beside Davinson isn't working particularly well. Goss doesn't really move that well. Even as limited as he is, even having somebody like Callaghan there makes more sense and has worked for St. Johnstone at times because he's capable of kind of breaking past other midfielders. He's basically just a box-to-box midfielder. And at the moment, there's not a lot of movement there in that middle two. Swanson and O'Halloran haven't been fit and have kind of taken their time to get into the team. I think Swanson is the weekend was reasonably positive, but him and O'Halloran really need a kind of run of games to see if they can get back up to form. And it just hasn't quite worked for them. And I guess if you're Tommy Wright bringing in O'Halloran, you think that'll help cover the shortfall in the wings and maybe give the guys out there a bit of a rest. Take a bit of pressure off, but it's not really happened. So what you're kind of seeing, I guess, is the fact that Kennedy's been pretty much an ever-present this season. And you're going to fade at some point, especially when you've got so much onus on you to actually be the creative force in there. Tony Watt hasn't scored in 9 games either, so they're really struggling up front.
He misses so many sitters, doesn't he? That was a really bad one. That wins him a point if he puts that in.
I mean, the best way I can put it is they looked like a side who were both incredibly surprised to go ahead and then equally surprised to go behind. Like, they didn't really know where...
I watched the game on Alba and it was against the run of play when they scored.
Yeah.
And Tommy Wright said after the game that he felt that there wasn't much between the teams, and I think that was a bit disingenuous. I think St. Johnstone had a lot of possession in the second half at 2-1, but Livingston were protecting what they had, because Livingston are very good at protecting what they have. And save that Tony Watt-Sitter, they weren't really troubled that much. And like I say, when St Johnstone went ahead, it was against the run of play. It was a very, very poor performance overall.
And if you wanted to, like, if you look at what both teams were trying to do, like St Johnstone were trying to get the ball down, and they were trying to, you know, trying to do what they have all when they were good back in the days when they were good, and they were trying to get their creative players into it, but it just never looked like it happening. Whereas Livingston looked like they were going back to doing what they were good at. You know, they were dangerous from throw-ins, they were dangerous from corners, they were getting the ball into the box early from wide areas, and they were causing all sorts of problems. I mean, I think Cammy Bell is still looking for that cross for the first goal, because yeah. He was about 6 feet away from it. But there was a, Livingston managed to, they've been flat for a number of weeks, but they managed to sort of bring in the chaos factor again, and St Johnstone didn't really know what to do with them and weren't winning, like weren't closing them down in wide areas, weren't stopping the ball coming into the box, and were losing relatively simple aerial duels.
Yeah. I thought Lawson was good for Livingston, and
really,
I think...
It really was.
He's been somebody, I guess, who's had a poor start to the season, but he's picked up in 2019, and that bodes well for, I guess, the rest of the season. But he did look very tidy this game, and it was a kind of, it felt like a bit of a back to basics thing for Livingston, kind of relying on their centre halves for mm-hmm. both assisting mm-hmm. and scoring the goals.
Hackett's their top scorer of the season.
Yeah.
Joint top scorer, yeah. He was saying after the game that he thinks it could be... I mean, he's pretty much saying... the interview pretty much confirmed that he's going to leave the club. Mm. And he was kind of saying that it was an end of an era, and a lot of the players in the team had earned their move, which I think you can't really disagree with, can you? I mean, but that's going to be some rebuilding job for Livingston to do next season if these guys do depart, because Gallagher's already... Has he actually signed the pre-contract with Motherwell, or is he...
I don't think it's been confirmed, but it's, widely believed. It's not just that they are a talented group of players who have, you know, seen them up through the divisions and surpassed expectations again this season. It's that they're a talented group of players who play a pretty specific way that is very hard to recreate with, you know, in the market that they're going to be working in.
If St Johnstone want to revert to type, for instance, then they might find a new home.
Sexy Livy next season.
but you're right. Those very hard to get those centre halves or that level of centre half to. Because that's where that game plan's built on, is having that quality of centre half that you can then build out from for the rest of the team. And yeah, I don't know where they would get them from if they were to lose them all.
Yeah, I mean, they're safe. You know, sack off every Saturday for the rest of the season and go and watch lower league English games.
And it's difficult to buy that team spirit that you get growing together from League One up to divisions. I don't know what's been up with Hardy recently, why he's not been starting matches, but they started with, I mean, you can't really argue because they've won the game 3-1, but they started with Scott Robinson in attack in this game with Erskine and Sibbald wide, and I mean, Robinson wasn't much of a threat up front on his own, but they had Erskine and Sibbald coming narrow, which worked. But it was more a question to know if anybody... Has he been out with injury, or is it just like loss of form or something like that? Because he was on fire for a little while.
Yeah, I don't think he's injured.
He did come on, yeah.
I think just a rotation of personnel, and they haven't had a great run of form recently. I thought Robinson was good without... Like, he caused problems.
He was good.
Without
a goal
being
threat.
A goal threat, exactly. Yeah. And that... When you've got a centre back who can mm-hmm. get five for the season and be your top scorer, then you've got defenders that are a threat in the opposition box, you can maybe get away with that.
Right, well, let's move on to the next game at Dens Park, where Hearts came away with a 1-0 win. Both teams tried to outshit each other in this game, it seems. A game so bad that the Terrace Podcast...
Never try and outshit Dundee.
A game so bad that the Terrace Podcast, Joel Sked left at half-time. Oof. For the boozer.
It's a brave move. I've never done that. I mean, for all the terrible games, I think because I'm tight and whatever else. But yeah, I've never actually done that.
No, I don't think I have either. But then I know Joe well enough to know that he will not have taken that decision lightly.
No,
and it must have been an absolute stinker.
Oh yeah, I don't want to.
It did look it. And any game in which the winner involves your centre, your main striker going in two-footed on one of your teammates and the ball sort of dropping kindly in the six-yard box.
I've watched that go multiple times. Yeah. I'm still not sure what happens. What I do know that happens is that Ikpeazu puts in a slide tackle of sorts, takes out four players, including Callum Morrison.
Yeah,
and the ball falls kindly to Sean Clare.
I mean, that kind of chaos, who would have seen that coming? If you can't work on that in the training ground.
No, but a very fitting goal for the game, I think.
It seemed like it. I mean, Rob Borthwick describing it as an absolute screamer to round applause on Twitter. It seems to sum it up. It was, even you can tell. I mean, I watched the highlights of this. I know no more than that, other than everyone telling me it was grim. But even the highlights look pretty grim. There's not an awful lot to pick out of it.
I mean, Dundee had their chances.
Yeah, but they, strangely for a team that looked dead and buried and then got a bit of momentum and looked like they had a bit of belief about them, they don't look like they have any belief anymore.
Yeah.
And they look like they wanted something from Scott Wright, who didn't really turn it on, but he's only 21, 22, so... Not quite sure they're going to need a bit more than that. Dundee had previously looked quite settled and organised and disciplined, and they had their chances early on. And I mean the goal kind of came against the run of play, and then just sort of deflated Dundee a little.
Yeah, I mean that's happened this season as well, where they've looked okay and then they've lost a goal. I mean it happened maybe earlier in the season more often, but it has happened quite a bit. I mean I think they're seriously missing Nelson in terms of a goal threat. I think he's only played four league games, but within them they've taken 7 points from them, and in each of those games he scored. I think they lost 3-0 to Motherwell. That was the only game that he didn't score in, not including a cup game. So, I mean, that's huge when he's had that much of an impact, but they just physically haven't been able to get him out on the pitch. And then defensively, I think it's about 11 games now without them keeping a clean sheet. I mean, the defensive issues they've got and the personnel there has been obvious. And the issues that the guys have brought in, including McGowan, haven't quite been good enough to bring everyone else up to that level. They probably needed some Berra-esque signing. They maybe hoped kind of...
Berra of last year.
Yeah, not that, yes, not this year. But somebody who could kind of manage that, organise that defence and kind of lift everyone around him. And McGowan's fine, but... He's not really that level, and they are just a bit soft at both ends of the pitch still. Not awful, but just a bit soft.
I mean, from a Hearts perspective, it's very well. I mean, what's the feeling like from this season? Because it seems like it's largely negative. However, they're only
can very much
four
go
points.
Either way.
Yeah, I mean,
that's the thing.
A couple of good games from a final,
a disastrous next few matches. I mean, I don't think they're going to fall out of the bottom six, but worst case scenario is could go down into the bottom six and get knocked out by Partick Thistle tomorrow night. And then it's a shocking season. Even not going to Hampden and finishing sixth, say, not making it into Europe, I think it would look like a disappointing season overall given the start that was made to the season. But at the same time, your two championship teams beating... You're away from a cup final, two... Why can't I put those words in order to make a kick in a sentence? Do you know what I mean? They've got two championship teams to play and then they could be in a final. They were already in a semi-final earlier this season and they could potentially still get a European spot, even though I wouldn't back them to. So it can very much go either way at the moment. But even... not achieving what they should have or what they could have given the start they made this season, I think you have to take into account the injuries that they've had. Most key players have been out at some point. Haring, Naismith twice, Suter, Berra hasn't been the same since they come back. Uche, all these guys have been out, and not just for a couple of weeks, for months, for lengthy spells. So any perceived failure or any failure at the end of the season, I think, has to take that into account. But yeah, I mean, it could still go either way. We could still end up cup winners and finish in the top four, or we could finish sixth, get battered in every game after the split, and go out of the quarter final to Partick Thistle tomorrow. So it's very much on the fence as to how Hearts of season is going to finish up.
It feels a bit like the cup one's the big one, obviously, given the draw as well. The fact that, I mean, it's such an easy route to the cup final, potentially, given they played with Auchinleck, Talbot, then Livingston, who were in a poor run of form at
Livy
the time.
First, then Auchinleck, Talbot.
Yeah, and then two championship teams, neither of whom have been set in the heather light at any
one
regular
spot in the league, and we couldn't beat
them. Yes, so, that, to me, from an outside point of view, it feels like that's the really big thing that'll ultimately come back on Levine if they don't succeed, and at least get into the final. Once you get to the final and you play Celtic or Rangers or Aberdeen, then you know, you can get away with that a wee bit. But yeah,
and it's a one-off game that Levine's shown that he can win. I mean, not a cup final. He's not shown that he can win a cup final. He's shown that he can win one-off matches in these types of fixtures, in these, again, certainly in league fixtures against those sides. We should, just before we move on to the last game, talk a little bit about the Dundee chances. I kind of alluded to it earlier. The first one set up by a Haran flick-on. This is just kind of very much in the tone of this match, where Haran flicks it on. I can't remember who it was down the wing. It's Kenny Miller. Kenny Miller down the wing. He crosses it over. Christoph Berra continues his 2019 defending. And Dales had a pretty decent chance to put it in, but Garuccio, I think it was, got in the way to
it was actually really good defending. You see so many goals coming that way that the fullbacks switched off, and the fact that the centre-halves have pulled across, and the fact they actually paid attention and then won the header was really good.
And then there was the Miller chance towards the end, which I think Kenny Miller still thinks is going in.
Kenny Miller said, and Kenny Miller started the season relatively well, and then there was talk of him, the next goal he scores is going to be the oldest Dundee goal scorer of all time, and he hasn't scored since. He's still going to be the oldest goal scorer, but he's going to be about 45 years old.
Like when a player gets to 99 goals and they have a t-shirt underneath. They never score that 100th goal. Anything else to add about this game before we move on to and do what the best we can with a 0-0?
No, I mean, I think just in terms of who's actually going down, it's still really hard to tell. I think I thought Hamilton a couple of weeks ago, and then they beat Aberdeen at Pittodrie, and they've all kind of still shown that those wee positives now and again, but in other weeks they've still continued to look rotten. So, and they're just not picking up enough points. I honestly can't separate the three of them at the moment.
In any given 2 week period, you'll change, like, at the moment. You change your mind any number of times, but at the moment, Dundee look like the worst team.
Yeah,
they are in the worst form. Definitely, that's three defeats on the bounce now. 1-1-8. They could be bottom by the time this podcast goes out, especially if this game, which is half time and 0-0 at the moment, I think Simmering go above Dundee goal difference. So yeah, they could be bottom by the time the guys are listening to this. We'll move on to the last game. I think it's going to be a shorter podcast this week, but no, I think we'll be alright.
We have literally had one last game, to be fair.
Celtic 0, Aberdeen 0. Celtic lost their 100% home record for the season, and Pat Bonner said that they had fatigue in the brain.
I strangely, strangely understand him. I mean, yeah, whatever. Fine. But I mean, Leonard said something similar. He talked about the,
I think
the,
he was trying to paraphrase Leonard.
Fatigue on the brain sounds better than... Yeah. And I think there's something in that. It's probably fair. I mean, they were missing a fair amount of legs in the team, McGregor and Christie especially. But they felt really flat. Their two best chances came from Ayer, One, because he just started rampaging Virgil van Dijk style through
the middle.
It's
pretty good when he's not losing the head.
Yeah. And had another one disallowed, from a free kick, which was well worthwhile because it meant that all the bells and whistles of the Celtic light show went off. And it's really, really satisfying watching that when it doesn't quite come off. But I think there was something in it. It did feel a little bit like there was a good atmosphere at the start of the game. Lennon was back, but they never really got going. To Aberdeen's credit, they were very good defensively. They had a lot of legs on and a lot of runners.
They set up differently, didn't they? I mean, is this because of Lennon as opposed to Rodgers being in the dugout now, and Lennon still? Because pretty much every time, in recent times anyway, certainly under Rodgers, McInnes seemed to favour going man-marking all over the pitch. And it didn't matter where Sinclair dropped to, Logan would follow him. And it didn't matter where Rogic went, for instance, Considine would follow him. And it didn't work more often than it did for McInnes. But this one, it seemed like he went for... They were a back four and they were staying in position. Is that because it was against Lennon, or was this him abandoning?
I think so. I think McInnes tried so many different ways to get anything from Rodgers. You know, everyone did, but he tried playing effectively nine defenders and Sam Cosgrove. He tried playing runners. He tried playing all the physical players. He tried going man for man. Never really got anything from him. But he has got an exceptionally good record against Neil Lennon. I mean, I think McInnes has won 7 of the 15 meetings that they've had, and 6 of those Lennon was in charge of Celtic.
He always got the better of them when he was Hibs manager, didn't he? Only
lost once to Lennon's Hibs side, but beat Lennon's Celtic side twice previously. So has a pretty good record against him, and I don't know whether that's just... I suspect that he set up this way because he thought it would be a Lennon team, and partly Celtic having to play the midfield that they did helped with that. They were a little bit more conservative than they might have been. But it was the first 0-0 in this fixture in 25 years, and I think McInnes. You can't go to Celtic Park and expect, in this season especially, you can't go to Celtic Park and expect anything other than, if you get anything, it's a bonus. But strangely, it felt a little bit like they actually should have won it. And Stevie May had the great chance at the end to win it. But
if it falls to anybody but Stevie May.
I would kind of agree on the thing about Celtic as well. And this might be something that they have an issue with if they continue on with Lennon as Hibs and... previously, I guess, Celtic have found. And it's been a pretty full-on few weeks for Celtic, I guess. The fact that, obviously, Rodgers has left, then Lennon's come in, and then Lennon's away to Hearts in that game, the kind of late winner, and then the Scottish Cup game, which is basically the biggest game in Lennon's return to date and will continue to be. The Scottish Cup's the big thing now, really, because there's enough of a buffer to Rangers in second. So there is a lot of tension built up. I mean, I thought Lennon looked knackered, actually. And post-match, he's only been in the job a couple of weeks, but it kind of seemed like it's been a very intense, full-on few weeks, as opposed to maybe if they'd continued under Rodgers, they'd have just kind of serenely gone about their business, whereas there's been all this upheaval. I think that is going to have some sort of effect. And also for the players, you're sort of, again, getting used to different styles, and Lennon is a different style to how Rodgers plays. Having Rogic and Brown holding does again kind of slow things down a wee bit. And Rogic. It does slow things down a wee bit. And you've still got Henderson in there, who's still young and isn't, you know, he's been very promising, but he's not as good as McGregor or Christie in that position. So he's kind of... Edward was dropped, which I'm not 100% convinced by Burke yet, to be honest. I don't know what you guys think.
I think Rodgers seemed to get a couple of decent performances out of him as a centre forward, but I think long term he doesn't look like a centre forward. And I think that's... Is that the last two games now he's been moved to the right, and Forrest has been put into the centre, I think. Or was it the first game?
Well,
that was the first game that Forrest has moved inside. Yeah. Sorry. So I don't think that's the. I don't think that's a long term thing.
No, but
being a centre forward or shouldn't be. I should say.
But it makes you wonder what the point of Burke is. He wasn't that successful as a right winger in the past 2 years. So they've obviously had this experiment of trying him at centre half because he's strong and he's fast. But given the way that teams set up against Celtic, I'm not convinced that's going to work that much because.
No space
in behind for him to catch defenders out, and maybe actually in the second half there was maybe more opportunities for that to happen, but he wasn't deployed there by that point.
He's certainly got raw attributes. He's still young. What was it the Red Bull Leipzig manager said about him when he was over there?
No hard drive or something.
I can't remember. His hard drive was empty or something like that. He was had all the physical attributes, but his hard drive was empty. It's maybe a bit punchier in German.
Yeah. It's probably one word for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that when any team went to Celtic Park to play Brendan Rodgers' Celtic side, there was an air of invincibility about them, and any kind of change disrupts that. Mm. Now, if Celtic go and win this game, they probably immediately get it back, and they will get it back at some point. But it didn't feel watching it didn't feel like there was it was coming. It didn't feel like there was a goal coming at any point. And the post match, Conor McNamara, from the BBC said Brendan Rodgers was asked. The first thing he did was ask about the Celtic score. No, but everybody's taken this as
still
a sort.
At it.
No, but everyone's taken this as a sort of his heart was there. He just wanted to know. I took that as what was the Celtic score? Of course, he fucking knows what the Celtic score is. Everyone can get the score. Brendan Rodgers doesn't have the internet, so he can't check the Celtic score for himself.
He's doing it because he's trying to still show that he's a Celtic fan.
Oh, really? They
drop
points for the first time, right?
He's still bullshitting. He's still at it, even though he's left. He's still bullshitting to the Celtic fans.
But that's almost the weird thing about Rodgers, that he's so bothered about his perception and how he's seen that he actually did something completely against that by leaving Celtic when he did for Leicester, because. Rodgers' whole thing is about Rodgers' legacy and how great he is and him as a person and that everyone likes him and the whole Clyde Tunnel story and everything. And then that's all that was. And I think most people could see through that as being utter bullshit at the press conference. Which is all, like I say, that's why it seemed very strange in a way that he left when he did, because he's all about what people think of him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, we'll leave it there, guys. Thank you very much for listening. You can get us on all the usual channels. I'm not going to go through them all. Please check out our Patreon, though. We're going to go away and record a lower league winners and losers right now. There's also a couple of things that have gone up recently. A very good Scottish Football Life by Alistair Heather. He was out on the Arab Arctic bus or something like that. I think he might have done the United supporters down to the game at Thistle. It's worth listening to. It's worth your fiver alone. There's also another podcast with him and Gary Cocker and Craig Fowler going ranking Jackie McNamara signings. The first part of that went up today, and there's lots of other stuff that you should really be checking out. All that's left to say is goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Sports Social Podcast Network.